A reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, from the fourth chapter entitled Transcendental Knowledge, text number 2. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarsayo vidu sakalineha mahata yoganasta parantapa evam. Thus, parampara, by disciplic succession, praptam, received, imam, this science, rajarisaya, the saintly kings, vidu, understood, saha, that knowledge, kalena, in the course of time, iha, in this world, mahata, great, yoga, the science of one's relationship with the Supreme, nastaha, scattered, parantapa, O Arjuna, subduer of the enemies. Translation. The supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore, the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings, because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demoniac persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims, as soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators. There arose the need to re-establish the disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore he declared that the purpose of the Gita, appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment, also there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to the authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demonic, because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English, as it is received by the Parampara disciplic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity, but if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculation, it is simply a waste of time. Om Jnanakimanandasya Gyanandana Salakya Chakshurumilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karuti Vachalam Pangam Langayati Girim Yat Kripatamaham Bande Shri Gurundi Natarinam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The principle of the Parampara system is that the truth is the truth throughout all times, and that not the truth of yesterday is no longer true today. And therefore, the same truth is carried forward generation after generation because it cannot change. And this is an important simple fact, which is totally logical. The truth is applicable to all time, place, and circumstance, because nothing has really changed. The human predicament is still the same. We still have the very same needs as human beings have always had. Our very nature is the same. Our problems are the same, and the solutions are the same. The problems are identified in Bhagavad Gita not as lack of comfort in life, but the problems are identified as birth, death, old age, and disease. And these are the problems that are recommended to be solved. Bhagavad Gita is pointing out that life does not begin at birth, nor ends at death. So the scope of life is extended far beyond the short experience that we have between birth and death. Prabhupada, in some conversations, is pointing out that if that would be all there is, so small, right, so insignificant, actually, such a small span of life, and if that would have to be the all and everything, right, how could that possibly fulfill just this tiny little moment in eternity? It's so insignificant. It is a fact that life is eternal, and that life in the material world is the life of changing bodies in different forms of existence. That the soul becomes preoccupied with this material energy, trying to enjoy it. Apareya mitas tvanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhuta maha baho yayedam daryate jagat. It is said that the living being is trying to exploit the inferior energy for his own enjoyment again and again, and in this way is always making new plans to exploit the material energy. So this is our business, the business of the conditioned soul. However, by doing so, we minimize our natural potential. By preoccupying ourselves with matter, we are minimizing our natural potential, and at that state, the soul is only very partially active. It said the soul is in a dormant state, and the natural functions of the soul, which are thinking, feeling, and willing, at that time are executed by the mind. So in the conditioned state, the thinking, feeling, and willing of the living being is taking place through the mind, and only in a very limited matter. Therefore, life in the material world can never satisfy, because it is not in accordance to our true nature. So no one in the material world is ever satisfied. Therefore, Bhagavatam points out, Parabhavastavatabhudajato nayigyasito atmatattvam, that as long as we are not inquiring into the absolute truth, we are always defeated in life. We'll never be a success. Somehow or other, even in the midst of so-called success, there is something that is inadequate. There is always some imperfection, some great lacking in the material world. There is no such thing as that everything is perfect. Some people might say, well, all right, that is too much to ask. Learn to be satisfied with what is there. But this is an artificial approach to life, because actually everyone wants perfection. Perfection is really deep in our heart. We do want perfection. And we can develop some philosophy that be satisfied with what is there and tell ourselves, yes, yes, we are satisfied. But deep in our heart, we are not fully satisfied. Right? Some frustration is there. And although we may not admit it and philosophize, yes, yes, I am satisfied, actually, this frustration due to dissatisfaction is there within the heart. And then this, it is said, this frustration leads to anger. Anger is the younger brother of lust, they say. So in this way, there is anger in this world, and the whole world is facing this anger in so many ways. There are so many forms of aggression in the world where one living being is taking it out on another. Also in the animal forms, there are many means to express aggression. Many poisonous animals, such as snakes and scorpions, are unnecessarily aggressive. Snakes are unnecessarily biting other creatures, right? Not for the sake of defense, nor for the sake of food, of feeding themselves, but simply for the sake of, out of spite, yes, out of anger, out of envy. Spiders are also considered to be envious creatures, and in this way, there are various animal forms of life where living beings enter when they are in an envious state of mind. Piranhas, right? Like that, we can think of different varieties of creatures that are having a somewhat envious mentality, whereas others are very peaceful. Therefore, cows are recognized as harmless creatures. It is that the cows, their entire existence is favorable. Even their stool and urine are favorable. The cow dung has antiseptic properties, is perfect for fertilizing. Even the urine of the cow is a perfect medicine for those who have liver problems. Right? And like that, everything about the cow is favorable. What to speak of the milk, which is very rich substance. And the cows are peaceful and in the mode of goodness, and therefore, it is said, are essential for a civilized human society. We tend to think that civilized means to eat with knife and fork, but real civilized means to eat with the hands. Yes, to eat with the hands is considered civilized. Right? We thought that was barbarian, but rather that is considered civilized. How is that? It said if one eats with the fork, how one will know what the nature is of the substance, then how superior it is to eat with the hands. One feels, oh, this is hard. This is soft. This is hot. And in this way, so many signals are already sent to the mind, which can prepare the body for what is coming. This is a very superior way to eat. So in this way, it is more civilized, actually. There is more knowledge involved in the matter. So real civilization is that culture which is favorable for life in this world as well as in the next. That is real culture. So disciplic succession means more than scriptural knowledge alone about the nature of the soul. We have discussed that the soul is within this temporary body and then in due course of time continues to the next. in the endless cycle of birth and death in this material world. That is one aspect coming through the cyclic succession, philosophy. But beyond that, through the cyclic succession also comes culture. And culture is very important to us. It offers us a way of life. Without culture, where would we be? What could we do? But it is culture that really saves us. Therefore, it can be understood that this movement is not only bringing in a philosophy, but also a culture. Sometimes it is questioned, do we really have to become Orientals? And do we really have to wear Indian clothes? You know, I read a little description about me in some article, and it said, a man dressed like Gandhi, right? Here I am, bespectacled, just like Gandhi. Well, I guess, you know, I never realized it before, but afterwards I thought, well, I guess I do look a little bit like Gandhi, actually. I guess I do. I thought it was quite perceptive of the journalist. So, is this what it is? Am I? I have been typecast now, right? I am in the category of Gandhi. That settles that. We've put a label on it. He is, in that mood, like Gandhi. Okay. All right. Anything else about Gandhi? Yeah. Gandhi. Okay. Non-violence. Not practical. What else do we know about Gandhi? Okay. Now. Doesn't make sense. Reject, right? Gandhi was shot, right? In other words, it didn't work. Failure, right? So by typecasting, we have so easily already dealt with the man, right? Before we even understood what he said. Yes. Gandhi reminds you of India, of very skinny people, just tolerating flies crawling over their faces, diseases, and so on. And then you get the bank account number where you can transfer your money, right? So is this what we want in our Western society? To have a culture of apathy, to introduce a culture that don't worry, it's not really about life in this world. It is all about life in the next. And we too are now going to develop this spirit of comfort, of tolerance, and get the same mess they have as they do in India. Instead of dealing with issues and matters properly, I mean, culture, are we going to introduce the culture of the East? And does that make sense? A culture is born out of time, place, and circumstance. This is Europe, right? Here, we have different needs. Here, in Europe, we require so many things, right? As they told Prabhupada, when you go to the West, right, you cannot wear these clothes, right? You should wear shirt and pants, right? That is suitable for that climate. And without alcohol, how can one handle the cold? You need it to stay warm. And some flesh also is required to develop a bit of resistance against that cold. In this way, they argued. But Prabhupada pointed out simply that so many Indians are going to the West to beg, because they declared themselves poor, and then they became beggars, and they went to beg in the Western world. But Prabhupada said, I have not come to take. I have not come to take anything. I have come to give. And that he pointed out, not to come to the West to get any of the so-called benefits. A few little dollars and a few little Prabhupada had no need. He was perfectly situated, and actually pointed out that New York was such a hellish place, and how he came from this very nice place, he said. He said, what would I be doing in this hellish place? Why would I be here? Right? For what reason in the world would I be here in such a hellish place? I was so nicely situated in Vrindavan. Right? But if not for a mission, if not for spiritual purposes, yes. So it is not that the culture of Krishna consciousness is a culture of simply tolerating the material onslaughts and just spending our days with spiritual activities. That's why people say, go get a job, right? Be realistic. Deal with life. Don't live in a cloud. Come down, dreamer, you know. Deal with the facts of life, right? Take care of your family, right? What happened to you on the way? Celibate monk, what happened? Did your mother mistreat you? Or what was it? What is the trauma that is leading you to this artificial behavior? Be a natural human being, right? Love and learn to be loved, right? What is wrong? Some deep emotional trauma and hurt must be there. Is that it? Giving up the world? Right? Why are you giving up the world? What has happened to you? Poor soul. Right? In this, we are thinking, a mundane man who is thinking that, look, you know, we have to be realistic. Yes. But how far does our realism go? What do we know in the midst of our realism? What do we know about life? What do we know about reality? We may study, we may have different degrees, but what do we really know? How far does our knowledge extend? What do we really know about the world we live in? So little. The tip of the iceberg. What's the rest of the iceberg? We have no idea. In this way, our view of reality is always changing. And throughout history, constantly, our culture and our idea is changing and changing and changing. We in the West have an experimental society, always trying out a new experiment. The latest one is with the environment. Right? What are we doing to the environment? Right? Everyone is aware that this is getting out of hand. Oh, ho, ho. Adjust now, but not possible, because the economy is almighty. And what can we do? We are simply being pushed along. There is good sense. Good sense makes no sense in modern times. It doesn't. Right? Good sense can be spoken, and everyone will say, this is very nice, good sense. But it makes no sense, right, and dollars, right? It makes no profit, good sense. And therefore, nobody cares, because profit is the predominating principle. And therefore, the real purpose of life is not being achieved. Happiness is our natural aim. Happiness is what we are looking for in life. But we are in the pursuit of it, right? We are turning the whole world into hell. And this is the awkward condition we are in. In the name of happiness, we are caught in a system which is not in our control. One class of man is trying to exploit another. So therefore, this movement is a revolutionary movement. This movement is a movement which has quite an agenda. Yes, we are ready to say it straight. We want to overthrow the government. Yes, we definitely want to overthrow the government. And that's not everything, no. We don't want to leave it at that at all, right? We want to go much further than that, right? Yes, you know what we want to do? We want to close the universities. No. No, no, not that. Yes, we are absolutely serious about it, right? Close them down. Just ban them all. What's going on? Is this a very sectarian movement after all? No, it's not. We want to not at all ban the culture of knowledge, right? It is not that we want to keep people dumb and uneducated. Although we absolutely don't consider it a profit that every man in the world can read and write. No, in our opinion, that's not required, right? In fact, we feel that many people in the world are overeducated, and there is no real gain in spending years in learning how to read and write all kinds of rubbish things, right? Rather than to learn an honest profession, to work on the land. Actually, life should be agrarian-based, not industry-based. Real wealth is in land, is in cows, and not in, as Prabhupada said, nuts and bolts. Right? You cannot eat nuts and bolts. So we can make more and more factories and get more and more machines, but in the end, we'll be short of the natural resources. Right? And then we'll eat artificial things. And the good of nature disappears. In the name of progress, it will disappear. The duration of life then will go down, and so on. And in this way, we ourselves are creating the conditions of the age of Kali. How superior is the Vedic culture? A culture which is based on spiritual values. And one of the essential principles of that culture is anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyat anasambhavo yakyat bhavati sambhava yakyat karma samutbhava, which means that the production of grain depends on rain, and rain depends on sacrifice. So the whole principle is, when sacrifice is duly performed, then rain will be there. So this principle, that rains are depending on sacrifice, is not known, is a revolutionary statement in the Bhagavad Gita. It's something that is totally new to the West. And even in India, is rapidly being forgotten and written off. But yet, this is the fact. That nature behaves according to the behavior of man. Man is in a unique position amongst all creatures. We know that man is different from the animal, right? And the difference is that man is responsible for his actions, animal not. Animal can steal, there's no jail sentence, right? Animal can kill, there is no question of murder, right? But human being is held responsible, yes. So the human form of life is special. The human form of life stands out. That is, again, not new. That would also be considered by most others, by everyone, anybody else. No. But the point is this, that the human form of life is the opportunity where we can engage in sacrifice. That is what makes the human form of life different. There is an opportunity to engage in culture. Animals have no culture. There's no culture. There's instinct, and there's a certain behavior, but there is no such thing as that animals are being trained by the elder animals, right? You don't see that. Some old dog teaching, and a whole bunch of young dogs sitting there in a dog school, or any other animals, right? There's no such things. There's no training. There is no culture like that. Culture means where the elders are carrying forward knowledge to the younger. That is culture. So the real education is not how to manipulate a computer or how to juggle some words, right? Real education means real education means to make progress, not to simply chew, right? Life after life in this world and try to continue to make the best of our sojourn in this temporary abode. Real education means to make true progress. So what is progress? Well, it seems that we've made a lot of progress in the last few hundreds of years, right? Prabhupada would say, is it progress? Is it really progress? In what way did we progress? In what way did we solve the problems of life? Well, we have solved the problem of many diseases. We've cured many diseases. Yes, and many new ones came, right? Many new ones came. Have we cured disease? Well, but we have much better health care. Have we, right? Yes. Oh, definitely. Nowadays we have hospitals, right? Yes, we do. Well, you know, hospitals can definitely save lives. They can. They can save lives and they can also destroy lives, right? They do. There are many diseases that are bred in the hospitals, right? And that are spreading from the hospitals itself, right? A well-known fact, right? Certain diseases you only catch in a hospital. In other words, it's not the perfection of life. And with the increased facility in the hospitals, so much facility lost. So much, we've lost a healthier way of life. Yes, we may have hospitals, but it is described that in the Vedic culture, they did not have hospitals, but they had brahmanas. Wise and learned brahmanas who would come and go door to door, who would be given some charity. They would not have a salary. They would live from charity, whatever people would give. And they would accept. They would not be greedy. They would not ask more. And they would offer knowledge about how to deal with life. They would have a look at one's karma. They would offer some medical advice. So this was mundane, material advice, but it worked. It is not that it didn't work. If we look at India, then what kind of a heritage does that country have? We can, of course, look at India Today. There is also some magazine called India Today, and that is all about war with Pakistan and so many things like that. But if we instead look at the heritage of India, then what is the heritage of India and what is the heritage of this part of the world? Right? And what if we compare that? Here we are in a castle. It's not bad, right? It's a nice pad, right? We have inherited it from the previous generations. They built it, not bad. They never knew what for, little did they know, right? What would become of this? I'm sure the man who built this castle could not imagine what it would become, right? Must have been a bit of a shock to him and his family if you would have told him. If someone would have told him the future, he might have died earlier from a heart attack, right? But this is what it became, this place. This is our heritage. It's nice. In Holland, we also have a famous castle known as Het Muiderslot. And sure enough, I went there for school excursions and still remember the torture chambers and all these things, right? And of course, we went on the tower, just like here, when the bus loads come for the tour. And I remember that also. I remember the toilet in the castle, where the hole, and it fell straight into the canal. I never forget all those details. It was it was interesting, right? What can I say? It matters a lot, yes. Now, if I look, if you just go to Delhi, right? In Delhi, if you want to go on some touristic excursion, we can take you to the Red Fort. Now, the Red Fort, right? The size of the place. My God, this castle would be like, you know, well, it would just be the little garden shed, you know, where you keep your rakes and your tools for cutting the grass, right? Compared to the Red Fort. I'm sorry to say, I don't want to blaspheme Radadesh, but, you know, I mean, it's a tiny little place compared to the Red Fort. Very, very small. Really small. If you go, I don't know, I'm from Holland, so I don't know the Belgian version of the palace. In Holland we have Soestdijk. You know, what do you have here in Belgium? The palace? The royal palace? What's it called? Laken? Kasteel van Laken, okay. So we've got the Kasteel van Laken also. And Soestdijk. Well, you know, I don't know Van Laken, but I know Soestdijk, and it's like, you know, it's all right, you know, it's okay, but it's not exactly what I thought when I was a child, what a palace was all about, you know, when my mother used to read to me fairy tales about princes and kings living in a palace, and our palace was like an almost mystical building, something different from out of this world. I must say, I was a little bit disappointed with Soestdijk, you know? I thought, like, well, okay, you know. Or in Amsterdam, at Paleis op de Dam. Looks more like a jail to me, you know? Big, dark building. I wouldn't want to go inside, you know? It's like, let me out. That belies up the dumb. Well, so it's not overly impressive. But then I go to, the Mysore Palace, you know. And now that's a palace. Exotic, right? Exactly as you, with towers and beautiful balconies and verandas and hanging carved wood ceilings, intricate, with glass roofs, huge domes with intricate peacock designs, right? It's like, wow, you know, look at that, you know, look at this opulence, right? It's just amazing. Look at these chandeliers. I mean, these are the biggest chandeliers I've ever seen. Look at them, look at the colors, etc. Like, yes, this is with crystals from Italy, with, you know, lapis lazuli stones from Iran, and it's like it's just out of this world, right? Is it from this planet, or has it descended from somewhere else? Now, that's a palace, right? You go in, you do the tour, and you think, shall I go again, right? As you walk out, you think, maybe we should go back in and do it one more time, yeah? Not like click, 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 all right, you know, we've seen the castle. Very nice, yeah. So, India is undoubtedly, if we compare the heritage of India, then one can see what has this country produced. What has it produced? It's absolutely amazing. So you're not going to tell me that this was a land of paupers, right, who had no culture and who had absolutely no economic development. So don't tell me that it's a loser's philosophy. Huh? A loser's philosophy, a philosophy for those who couldn't make it, who said, well, you know, just develop tolerance and just develop right? Inner wisdom, yeah, you know, a loser's philosophy. Right? But Krishna consciousness, right, is not a loser's philosophy. Rather, it is a winner's philosophy in all respects, both spiritually, both for the next life and for the present. Just see at what this country produced when its culture was in its full glory, right? And look at what we had, you know. Again, you know, I only know Holland. At the golden age, you know, we had the golden age. It all came from bringing spices from the east, you know. Yes. Nothing mentioned about the slave trade, which happened around the same time, right? That part is not in the history books. Sometimes a few black spices in the mix, right? So if we consider what is our heritage in this way, we can understand how great and glorious our culture was, right? Our graduate in literature mentioned to me once the difference between the Ilias, or the description of Achilles and the Mahabharata, and how Achilles, right, went to war just because someone got involved with his girlfriend and took a whole nation to war for that, right? So is that a reason to take a whole nation to war, to kill many people, to destroy many people's life over one girlfriend? Is this really, are these the higher principles we want to glorify forever? And do we have to learn this in school? Or can we go to the Mahabharata, which includes the message of Bhagavad Gita, where we see that Arjuna is sacrificing for the benefit of mankind? Right. Which is the greater literature? Right. Is there any question at all? In this way, we can see the superiority of the knowledge that comes down in the cyclic succession, and when we study it properly, we can see that it by far exceeds anything that our modern day society has to offer. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita actually offers us a better way of life in the present with better results in the future, and therefore we should adopt both its philosophy and its culture. Okay, with that I've come to the conclusion. And I'm now inviting your comments or questions. I knew it, you wouldn't like that. He is a university graduate. Ah, aha. Aha. Because the university is certainly into intellectual development, but it is not into moral development. Right? So, what is the point if man is developing his intellect, but at the same time morally remains a debauchee? Therefore, that kind of education doesn't work. Rather, the intelligent class of men is meant to be educated in high moral principles, and in even more so, in spiritual principles that are truly beneficial to all. Just like on the last day when I was in Australia, there was a little TV clip that they made, and the question was, in 5 minutes, what's the goal of life? Okay, in 5 minutes, what's the goal of life, mate? Okay, can you tell us? No worries. Okay, good on you. Here it goes, you know. Okay. So, the goal of life, obviously, is to be happy, right? Everyone's trying to be happy in his own way. So the question is, how do you do it? Right? Some try and do it on a surfboard, but how long can you do it? Have you ever seen an old man on a surfboard? Right? Not really. So that may not be the solution. Then, any other solution? So many attempts towards happiness, but all of them are only giving temporary result. Then, so that's one problem with the attempts for happiness. Another problem with the attempts for happiness is that the happiness of one is based on the suffering of another. Right? A second problem with happiness. So that's not really the highest type of happiness. So real happiness should be of an ongoing nature, of an ever-growing nature, and it should be beneficial for all. Then you're talking about real happiness. My happiness should make you happy too. Otherwise, what's the benefit? Right? So this we can only find in a spiritual solution, in a solution where we understand that everything is connected with the Supreme Lord, who is the source of all. Then when we are working within the arrangement of the Lord for His, according to His instruction, then we become of the same nature as the Lord, which means the well-wisher of all living beings, and we begin to act for the benefit of all, and we experience in His service our happiness, and all living beings can experience the happiness. So in short, back to the question, right, is that spiritual knowledge is what is required for the intellectuals, not a waste of time in learning some intricate detailed knowledge about some particular material thing, you know, the mating behavior of bats, right? And write some and get a degree on the basis of what bats are doing, or some other animal or other creature or some other topic. But the intellectuals, the intelligent class of men, is to offer real solutions in life so that they become the natural leaders in society and guide people towards a better way of life. So it's not that we want to close down the universities and then keep everybody dumb, right? But rather, we want to educate the intellectuals in studying the scriptures. So instead of universities, we once again will start the intricate study of the scriptures and create a class of very learned brahmanas who use all their intellectual prowess to benefit, selflessly benefit others, and who are taught not to take anything for themselves, who live themselves in simplicity, so that they are saved from greed and are really and are cultivating humility and the mood of being a servant, then society can flourish. So anytime you're ready to be deprogrammed, I know there was a group of people that were trying to deprogram Hare Krishnas, but you know, we have a more difficult task, right? We have to deprogram university students and cure them from that septic, right? That septic mentality to one who developed full faith in the scriptures, right? who are even ready to blindly accept every word of the Vedas, right? Whatever it says, because it's in the Vedas, it must be, it is truth, there is no doubt. So this is very difficult for one who comes from a university to come to this point, to say, because it's in the Vedas, it's truth. But it has to come to that point. Anyway, you bounce the ball and I bounce it back. If you want to give another swing, you can. Okay. That would be the interim stage. The interim stage of Krishna consciousness is not to get rid of everything. The interim stage is to use everything and add Krishna consciousness. But then, as we begin to add Krishna consciousness, our perspective on life changes, our priorities change, and obviously, after some time, we may not see the need anymore to have such elaborate institutions for certain purposes. We might rather invest the same funding in developing the temples. And we might just turn some of these universities into temples. Right? If I drive through a city like like Brussels, you know, I see so many temples. Right? As I drive around, I see, wow, look at this building, what a temple. Look at that building, what a temple. Wow, everywhere I just see temples. Right? And I'm just waiting for the days that we can give these buildings their true purpose. Just like this castle has become a temple. So, I think with Krishna consciousness, the purpose will change. Prabhupada sometimes says that, there's the cycles, first of all. Let me just make that point to get the context clear. There's the cycles of four yugas, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. These are periods of time. The Satya Yuga, the Kali Yuga lasts 432,000 years. Satya Yuga is four times as long. Treta Yuga, three times as long. Dwapara Yuga, two times as long. Right? So we are facing here these periods of time. At present, we are in Kali Yuga. Now, these periods repeat like cycles, just like seasons, again and again. So the question is, when they come up with such kind of descriptions, are they possibly referring back to a previous Kali Yuga? Because these exactly match the descriptions that we find about the end of Kali Yuga, right, in the Bhagavatam. In the 12th canto of Bhagavatam, predictions are given about the end of Kali Yuga, the era where we are now, and there it is described that indeed there will be such starvation, climate will get so bad, human form, duration of life will get so short, 25 years and one is old. It may be amazing, but then again, the way we go with our food package, put more poison, the way we go with intoxication, people are working on it, right? You see nowadays, 25-year-old men, you come to Amsterdam, I'll give you a tour, and you know, and I can show you some 25-year-old men. Right? No problem at all. Yeah. They already exist. So it's very well possible. It is a fact that Prabhupada said that the bones of dinosaurs, etc., he said these are remnants from a previous Kali Yuga. Yeah. He said because in the Kali Yuga, as it progresses, the human beings get smaller, and the insects get larger, and the reptiles get larger and larger. And it's interesting that we find descriptions in the prehistoric days, you know, whether it's the Paleozoanticum or some other one of those eras, that you have these kind of dragonflies, which are 1.5 meter, the span of 1.5 meter wings. Can you imagine it coming by? It's like a Harley Davidson, a flying Harley Davidson or something. Quite intense, right? There comes a wasp. Close the door. It could be people walk around with, they had these clubs, tennis rackets, whatever. for the wasps. I mean, it could be a whole thing to deal with that. So who knows what is left over from previous times. Like, for example, it is said that the radiocarbon method, right, is a system which is based on simply that there is a certain amount of radioactivity stored within the body. Then if one dies, right, then that's there's no further new storage, and there's a certain decrease, right? So then when they burn whatever, some a little bit of whatever they have found, they can see like from what point it started decreasing, and then they can calculate it back, how old it is. But they are then assuming that it will always decrease with the same rate as it's decreasing now. And there's absolutely no proof for that. So it's just, there's this one little assumption in there. And if that's not true, that it would always go at the same rate, right? Then the old theory would not apply anymore. All the calculations would be wrong. Yeah. All the dating would not work. So in this way, and there are many indications that there is, in behavior of nature, that there is fluctuation at different points in time. Therefore, radiocarbon method is not considered reliable dating. For that reason, who knows? The dinosaur bones, Prabhupada said, are from leftovers from the previous Kali Yuga. So we are ready to accept, right? After all, you know, Veda and the Acharyas, as good as Veda, Acharya Puraso Veda. So what can we do? Even if the universities disagree, down with the universities. All right, time has been moving along. Huh? Oh, there was another hand? No. No. Okay, thank you very much. We'll continue tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.